Starburns Audio. Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
Guys, did you know that in 29 states in the great United States of America, you can still get fired from your job for being a homosexual?
29
states. And in 30 states, you can still get denied housing, an apartment, leasing an apartment,
yeah,
because you like taking the date.
Okay.
It's true.
All right.
It's true. It's because that there are no federal laws that explicitly ban discrimination against LGBT Americans. There's no federal law. So this has been going on since 1974, trying to get some sort of sexual orientation, non-discrimination law put through Congress.
Yep.
And, you know, it started at sort of the start of the gay civil rights movement, you know, 1970. And it didn't really go many places because, obviously, it was a polarizing time. And then AIDS hit and that sidetracked everything. But then in the 90s, there was a push again to get some sort of laws pushed. And it didn't really go anywhere because primarily gay rights in the 90s became about don't
AIDS.
Ask, don't tell.
Right.
And it,
and AIDS, sorry. I said AIDS.
AIDS.
Sure, AIDS Ellie, too. I just went to AIDS.
No, I mean, it was. That was a big part of it. But
sure,
the Clinton administration focused on don't ask, don't tell. And then when Obama went and became president in 2008,
yep,
there was another hope that from the LGBT rights, civil rights movement, that he would go and actually push this law, this Equality Act.
ENDA.
And instead, his administration focused on abolishing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right.
And then, of course, we lost the House and went to the Republicans and the Senate.
2010, right.
And so the chance of it getting anywhere. And now there is a new Equality Act of 2019 being introduced, which would be sweeping ban of discrimination in areas ranging from housing to public accommodations.
What about bathrooms for transgender people?
That is included in that.
And what about bakeries?
That is also included in that.
So that would work in favor of queer people who want to get a cake and a baker can't tell them,
yes,
no, I'm not going to make you a cake.
Yes. And
which I can't believe is a trope, but it is.
It's being introduced in Congress. It is not going to go anywhere.
Nope.
Because the Republican Mitch McConnell would have to call it for a vote in the Senate. Not going to happen.
And why wouldn't he do that? Just because of his...
Because he's a Republican and he's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's just not the vote.
Mm-hmm.
In the Senate.
So
I think
would be an interesting conversation about this, and this would probably extend to a lot of social issues right now, which is for a majority of our lives,
yeah,
we've had a Congress that is so reticent to take on social change, even when innumerable opinion polls will show overwhelming support amongst the populace. This is
69%, in fact.
Absolutely. So 69% of people support. I bet it's way higher than that. Most people, even if you don't like gay people, most people don't think in a capitalist society that you should be fired from your job for being gay.
They actually... There's an interesting note to that,
mm-hmm,
that when you ask someone, do you think someone should get fired from their job for being gay, most people say, well, of course not. But then when you get down into the nitty gritty of it, so do you think somebody who is transitioning and isn't quite fully transitioned and starts wearing a dress to work, should that be allowed in the workplace or in a school as a teacher? Should a teacher be allowed to do that? And I, of course, believe that they should. But that gets into a really murky area within this where then some people question, well, should they? And
mm-hmm,
it doesn't necessarily go full support. Of course they shouldn't get fired. And it's this weird hot button issue that the Republicans are really good about taking something like getting fired from your job for being gay and then being like, but wait, I don't want a man using the woman's restroom.
But I don't want a guy in a dress teaching my kids
exactly
kindergarten. Right, sure. But I think...
And that's how these things fail.
No, absolutely. I agree with that completely. But I just think it's interesting because I think, you know, we've seen this with the movement in legalizing marijuana. We've seen this in, by the way, I've seen polls that show an overwhelming majority of Americans do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. Mm-hmm. And yet all we see are powerful, generally Republican state houses in Congress, the House and the Senate, controlling the narrative, and I just don't
understand.
Because
polls don't do shit. Polls?
Yeah.
Polls
the way
are
people vote
useless
is what matters.
Pieces of shit. We are a country of elected officials and laws are determined by districts in which those elected officials are elected, and then they vote in favor, hopefully in favor of what their district believes, and then that's how laws are shaped. Laws aren't shaped by 69% of Americans supporting the people not getting fired from the job for being gay. It's just not how this works. It's like the majority in the presidential election is not how we elect presidents. So I'm sorry that she got to him a million more votes than Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He won the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. Deal with it, bitches. That said,
sounds like Alan's pro-Trump.
No, it doesn't. I'm just saying. Like, I don't. I mean, there's an argument to be made about
we play by
the majority, but it's like
by the rules.
This is the rules. This is the laws. Now, I will say that the Equality Act of 2019 probably won't go anywhere. But this week, actually, as of recording, the Supreme Court announced that they'll in October at the start of their new session, they'll hear. And a case that could actually do what the Equality Act of 2019 is aiming to do.
Which case is that?
It's well, there's a few different lawsuits, but the lower courts have been basically sort of besieged. Is that the word? Besieged with cases about minorities, sexual minorities, getting fired from their jobs or being denied certain things, and the courts are torn. They're voting in or they're ruling in many different ways, and so the Supreme Court decided to hear three of these cases.
Well, one of them is a ruling from New York.
Yeah, skydiving instructor.
A skydiving instructor who said he was fired after telling a female client that he was gay so she wouldn't worry about being strapped tightly against him during the dive.
Which, dude, why would you even do that?
Don't worry, you won't feel my erection pressed against your butt.
The Second Circuit Court of Appeals said sexual orientation discrimination is a subset of sex discrimination. And that's an interesting fact that this is how, this is their argument that likely will cause this law or this change in our laws to go into effect is that sexual orientation is being defined as it was by the Obama administration and is no longer by the Trump administration as sex discrimination. So it's a gender discrimination.
Right.
So me being discriminated for being gay at my job site is actually sex discrimination.
Right. Well, we'll have to see what the Supreme Court has to say.
Yes,
let Brent tee up the second one because it's home state.
Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals said a woman who worked for a Michigan funeral home, was impermissibly fired 2 weeks after she told her employer she was transgender. Her employer said she did not follow the dress code, but the court said transgender discrimination is prohibited by Title VII.
And then the third case, 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against a Georgia man who lost his job with Clayton County after his participation in a gay softball league became known to his employer.
He was fired.
Yeah, the court said that civil rights laws do not cover sexual orientation discrimination, which in Georgia, that is very true.
That's true. That's crazy to think about that. On the emotional side of things, which is where my bread and butter generally go to. but you stop and think about that, and it's like you're in a gay softball league. Your boss finds out, and you get fired.
Well, I mean, it depends on where he's working. I don't know where this man works, but oftentimes in certain, especially corporate America, there's morality clauses that are in your contracts that you sign for employment, in which it basically says if you do something outside of this office that looks badly upon the company or the business.
Gay softball.
Yeah. That they can fire you.
That's crazy.
And
man.
It's up to the determination of that state's laws. And Georgia, of course, doesn't have non-discrimination laws that protect LGBT people.
I wonder if they found out he was in a gay softball league because he posed with his entire team, like with their butts showing on like home plate or something.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
not even joking.
We're here with our friends of the podcast, friends of ours in life.
IRL.
Writer and actor Lyle Friedman.
Hi.
And writer and actor Brandi Barber.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We've vacationed together. We've hung out. We've broke bread together.
Uh-huh.
Friends for a long time.
Yeah, I think
time.
Friends covers that. Yeah.
Friends. But more than just friends. When you travel with someone, it's a different kind of friend.
I don't think I'm invited to these vacations.
We went to Palm Springs. What are you talking about?
We did go to Palm Springs
New Year's.
Once. Yeah. That's
that
true.
Was really fun.
You weren't there, Lyle.
I tap danced in high heels the whole time, and you guys still talk about
those weren't high heels. Those were like kitten heels.
I did hear about that.
Yeah. For some reason, that was like the biggest thing that's ever happened to Elliot.
It was the time I was in these kitten heels, and I've always
wanted to be a tap dancer, and so whenever I have loud heels and or I'm wearing, you know, heels like that, which is very rarely. But when I do, I like to dance.
It is funny. It's really funny. At Halloween, when I was in drag, Brent took my heels and put and walked around in my heels, and it was the funniest thing.
It's a special moment because it's us watching you, the egg crack a little bit.
Yes.
You know, the gay yolk come out, and it's like, we're never going to see you in, like, a wig and makeup.
Yeah, usually you're very in control.
No.
Yeah, it's a level of whimsy I don't associate with you.
Yeah. Yes. That's why we're also excited.
Thank you.
Now, speaking of whimsy, speaking of whimsy, you guys are both sisters to gay men.
That's right.
Yes.
And so you're allies.
Well, that's a question.
But what if we weren't?
I know, right?
But that's actually a question. So we just wanted to have a just conversation with you because it's just a coincidence that we're friends. But yes, you both are older sisters to, well, Lyle's an older sister to a bisexual brother.
Yeah.
Can I say his name?
Yeah.
Jake.
Okay. Can I say his name? Darren.
Well, you don't want to out him if he's not out.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I know. He's fine. Yeah. He's fine.
I checked in. He's cool with this.
Okay.
Great.
And Brandi, you're an older sister to a gay brother named Steven. But Steven is a married man.
He is. He has a husband named Jimmy who's fantastic.
And they met in the Army.
In the Navy.
The Navy.
Oh, boy.
In the Navy.
Now my dad's mad. They met in the Navy. My dad was a formal naval officer, as was my brother, and as was his husband. And they were both stationed in Japan. And I think they met...
They met on Grindr.
Grindr.
Yes, because we had a couple... So here's the thing about Steven. He's very... he's very soft-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, you know, not withdrawn. I mean, he's goofy, but he tends to be like, you know, plays cards... What is it?
Close to the vest.
Right, close to the vest.
He talks when he has to.
Correct. He talks when he has to, which is great. So when we were asking him, I was asking him a couple of years ago about how he and Jimmy met, and he was like, or Jimmy, I think, was like, yeah, Grindr, when we were in the Navy in Okinawa. And I was like,
wow,
blown away, because Steven is somebody like Jake, Lyle's brother, who's always been in my mind as sort of somebody who I think of when I see the ridiculousness of gay stuff, and I try to, like, remember, besides Brent and Alan, like, people who can mirror that chaos or that mirror that feeling of feeling lost or confused or just baffled by gay stuff. Mm-hmm. And so with Steven and Jake, too.
People who don't fit the mold is what you're trying to say.
Right.
Or I fit all the molds.
But not even just fit the mold, but who I know would have a reaction that would make me feel less crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think, just put it more simply, they're normal people. They're not doing anything that necessarily screams one way or the other. You're just sort of like your average human beings who care and love about somebody else, and you're not trying to be anything other than the person that you are, not necessarily what society tells you you're supposed to be.
Well, I mean, but that is so inherent to that is because this happens to me all the time. That's generally what I've been attracted to, not always, but it's like you live your whole life and you don't pick those people out of the line at the bank, because not that I ever go into the bank anymore, but because because inherent in that nature is that they quote fit in, quote unquote.
But not necessarily. I mean, when I think that's sometimes saying like not fit in can sometimes run a sort of a tightrope with gay culture, because that also means like you're shameful of your gayness. And it's not necessarily I don't believe.
That's why I put the quotes.
But what I'm saying is like not necessarily don't fit in, but that just exists in their own way.
Heteronormativity like an okay word?
It isn't. It's
okay.
Like, my question to you is, what was it like? Well, first, when did you, both of you, find out that your sibling was queer?
I found out when my brother told me, I guess it would have been probably around 2012 or 13.
So you were adults when he came out.
I was very much an adult, and he was an adult, and he had not ever dated anybody before that. There were some friends that were like, you can't see them doing quotes, that were female, and I think he might have thought that he was attracted to women, but he wasn't.
So were you surprised?
No.
You were happy, I remember.
I was very happy. I was happy but not because he was gay.
No.
I know you don't mean that at all, Ellie. I was happy because he was happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he knew, after he told me, I saw him be the most him he'd ever been. Mm-hmm. So I was like overjoyed. Because it's not necessarily that I won't even say, like, I wanted to see him with a partner because I don't even want to force that narrative of being partnered means you're better or happier on anybody, because some people are asexual and don't want to be with anyone physically or even emotionally. So
that's like one end of the spectrum. The other end is Elliot. Yeah, someone who's sort of sexually unhinged,
out of control,
running around the city.
Oh, my God. I worry.
Dozens of dicks.
Oh, my God.
Like a snail, leaving a snail trail. Right. I'm patting Elliot's leg. So, yeah, that's how I found when I found out.
What was it for you, Kyle?
Lyle.
Kyle.
I mean,
were you an adult when he came out?
I think I was 22. Okay. Three? So hardly.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was the first person. It was kind of dramatic. It was 3 nights before he went off to college. It was actually sort of funny. We were at my stepdad's family's cabin, and they're fairly Catholic, and it's just one of those places where you're in bed by 10 and
whether you want to be or not.
Right. Wide awake in bed by 10, but that's like just what you do.
Yeah.
I've been on those vacations before.
Right.
That's my every night.
Now it is, but I think it was when he was 19 and anxious about going off to school. I just remember I woke up and we're in these like shacks in the woods and I hear him like stumbling around. Let's just say this is the first time I've ever had to like fill up a vodka bottle with water and try to like cover our tracks.
Yeah.
And the next morning he was like vomiting and I was like, he must have the flu.
Yeah.
And like it worked on the grandparents, but my mom was like, the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
But did he come out as bi to you?
He did. And I think I fucked that up because with Jake, I have actually come to like learn and accept that men can be bisexual. I think I was one of those like younger idiots where it's just every man I'd met who was bi was on his way to being gay.
Right.
And Jake is truly bisexual and or pansexual. As the
How
kids
did you
call
react? You said it was dramatic. How did did you?
He was belligerent and
he just came out while he was shit-faced.
It was horrible. He was like making a ton of noise, so I got scared that my scary stepdad was going to come and yell at us, so I was in like crisis management mode and I was like, okay, let's go for a walk, but it was dark and in the woods and we wound up on this golf course.
Oh my God.
And like we're sitting on this golf course and he's like slowly leading into it, but he was like, you know I like to wear the cardigans that your boyfriend likes, right? And I was like...
What does that mean?
Exactly. To be fair...
Yeah, I would too.
Nick was like a hipster...
Metrosexual type.
Yeah. Just... I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't know what Jake was trying to telegraph, but I was... I think he was
accessorizing,
he was drunk,
which probably
he was
means
pain,
queer.
And he like punched me in the stomach, and I was like, "What? I'd never seen him so tormented."
Uh-huh.
And so, finally, he broke down, and he was like, "I'm never gonna have the white. I'm gonna start crying. Sorry." Is this supposed to be a funny podcast?
Will it make you feel better if I laugh while you cry? Will that make you feel better?
Yes. Someone should be laughing. Pain is funny. But he was saying all the things that you never want your family member to say, which was like, I'll never have the white picket fence. People won't let me near their kids. I won't live up to what you guys want from me. I won't have kids. And... I just that killed me. And I don't know where he got that because my family's like...
Because you guys are from Philly.
Yeah.
And you're a very liberal family.
We went to like a Quaker school.
Right.
Where...
Voted in 2016. Good for you. Good for you. Swing state. Didn't win it this time. But...
I mean, let's just say like I went to a school where like we had sit-ins on the regular about, you know,
Quakers
like
shit.
To talk about everything. Right.
Yes. Yes.
I think what, you know, what's interesting about Jake is that he's very... unlike Steven, he's very emotive.
Yeah.
He's very
yeah.
emotional. He's
We're the child of two therapists. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't really hide his feelings, and he's a very, like, extroverted, hyper person.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting to imagine him coming to you with the idea of, I think, what a closeted person might feel like, I hate to say this, but, like, before it was cool.
Yeah.
Before it was, like... pretty much chill to come out.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, this was, I can't
well, I mean,
imagine.
But he's on, just to step on that
yeah, please,
a little bit.
Please do.
Like, it's cool, quote unquote, to come out as gay or lesbian now. But for a man to come out as bi, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of doubting. There's a lot of highway to gay. There's a lot of shame, I think, involved in being authentically bisexual as a man in this society.
Coming from
both
sides.
But that's not what she's talking about. She's talking about where he got, what cultural osmosis gave him this notion that he wouldn't have.
Well, that's what I mean, is that he probably had no, he has gay examples because of a liberal queer, you know, a liberal Quaker upbringing. He probably had gay people around him, but he's not gay. And so where is the example of a bisexual man that is living a traditional lifestyle? And there, it's probably not. It's very.
No.
I can't even think of one. It's hard to find.
God rest his soul.
I ended up breaking up with a friend from college because I went to him instantly after Jake came out, and I was like, how do I get this right? And unfortunately, my friend was like, well, he's gay, he's not bi, he's just, you know, ashamed, and you need to push him into being gay. And he was sort of...
Wow.
I think maybe stuff had happened to him in his past, so he was... There's some anger that I feel like...
Gay men have?
Well,
yeah. I think we've covered that on this podcast before.
That is basically what this podcast is about.
Something interesting is that when Lyle and I became friends... I didn't know Jake yet, but you would talk about him, and I was enamored with the idea of Jake because he was still in Philly, and I still remember you describing him as being, I think you were describing him as being like bi Eminem or something, like a bisexual Eminem.
That sounds
this
great.
Like aggro, like Philly bro, who was like pissed
he
at
is
like
very bro-y.
Yeah, but he was pissed at the idea, the expectation of what he was supposed to be. Like, be attracted to, and I was like, this vessel, I need to like save this vessel.
Yeah.
And you know, in meeting him, he's absolutely wonderful, and I can totally see, you know, he's a very real, honest, truthful
he's
person.
Authentically himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think connected us.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Yeah.
Because there's something about what you're describing his process, his coming out was like, that reminds me of mine, which is, it was, it was a roughly the same time period in my life, and it was more dramatic than it had to be. And I think it was, in a weird way, it was because I wanted it to be. Like I always give this example of coming out to my parents was really easy, and they had no problem with it at all. And I still stormed out of the house.
Sure.
And I like didn't talk to them for a week.
You didn't?
No, I didn't talk to them for like a week or something. And there's plenty of things we've...
Wait,
I mean,
this is after they said, like, we're cool with this?
Absolutely. There was
just
literally...
Just to give them a scare?
No issues at all with it. They were like, okay, all right, well, you know, my dad launched into a lecture about how it's evolution or, you know, all the shit. And... or like genetic or whatever. And I'm like, I'm leaving. And I just like left. And I wanted it to be dramatic because it's like you learn... That I mean, obviously this is years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, you kind of learn it's supposed to be sort of dramatic, and it's like in a weird way, it's your moment. It's your quinceañera.
Yeah.
For a gay guy, but it's almost like just the way you're describing this, based off of I don't know your brother, but based off of the way he's been described, I'm almost like, I wonder if he was doing the same thing. It was like he's going off to college, there's this all this transition in his life, and maybe he was just making it a really dramatic moment.
No, that's
no.
not Jake.
Yeah. No.
Jake is 100% earnest, honest. He wears his heart in his sleeve. Like
I think what was bizarre is that, and I'm sure people listening are going to be like, you dumb bitch, you're not this person. But Jake and I are incredibly close. I think our parents got divorced and we were like, you and me, we're a fucking team. Mm-hmm. And I was so blown away that I had missed this. And he's, I mean, to be fair, he really put on a great show of being like that cool straight guy who throws parties at his house and shows up like with hickeys. He was cooler than me. And I don't know if he would say that, but like I was a little intimidated by the kid who like drank in high school. Like I didn't lose my virginity until I was 21, so I was just like, you've got this shit.
This is you. This is like, your thing.
Yeah,
that's
like,
probably
you're
why
a rebel.
He was so vulnerable in coming out to you, because it was revealing something that wasn't that.
No, exactly. Yeah. I think to go from having the power of being a good-looking, popular athlete.
He is very handsome.
My mom also talks about how handsome Jake is.
Yeah, he's handsome.
On Facebook. Yeah. He's so handsome. He and Lyle look so similar. She's
she
so
talks
pretty.
About my
he's
legs
so
and his face.
It's true.
Put our bodies together. We're hottie.
But you were surprised when he came out?
I had no idea. And it's something I beat myself up about to this day.
Well, did you have that?
Really?
I
mean,
sorry. I felt when you, it really touched me when you said, you know, how did I miss this? Because I definitely, even though I was happy to know and happy that he told me and that he was, as I said, happy, there definitely was some time after that where I was like, was I there for him?
Yeah.
How did I miss this? And I will say a lot of it was me not wanting to impose it's none of my business. I took it like, it's none of my business.
Right.
He's happy. We came from a family where my mom and dad never were like, oh, who are you dating? Oh, is there a man in your life?
Right.
I was never raised with that kind of stuff. I know a lot of my friends have been. There's never anything like, when are you having children? Like,
right.
If anyone's having children, it's going to be my brother and his husband.
Well, that's actually something that I wanted to ask you, Brandy. So,
yeah.
Like, knowing both Stephen and Jimmy and your parents and you and your husband, I know you all so well. One of the things that I have always kind of taken away is that you're kind of the gay one in the family.
Well, that's what I was going to ask the same thing.
Necessarily mean you're gay. I just mean that, like,
her sensibility.
You represent the gay sensibility, because the rest of your family is they're very similar to each other in how they live, except for Jimmy. Jimmy, I think, is part of our team in that, like, he's a little bit weird and he likes the weird things that we like. And, you know, he and I always have a nice little, like, kiki fun weirdness. But, like, you know, Stephen and your parents, they're very.
They're military.
Yeah.
Military.
And you, in a way, kind of
I'm
represent
not.
That queer sensibility
of
sort of like, you know, analytical theater. Like, we always go out and have nice cake.
You
and
call
like
yourself, you describe yourself as a soft butch.
Yes, soft butch.
Yeah. And so, like, do you
beach,
think
it's beach butch right now, guys? You can't see it, but I have a tie dye and platform Birkenstock. Going into beach butch, it's getting warm.
Would you agree with that? And, like, how do you find your place within the scheme of your family, considering that?
Well, I'm the black sheep of the family, and I always have been. My brother's always been really good at rules, being on time, math, all the things I loathe. And I was the one that was like, I have to laugh. Like, I was like, I don't know. I guess I'll graduate from high school. Then we'll see what happens. And my parents were like, cool, cool.
Yeah.
My brother was like,
we're proud.
And like his junior year, there was like the East Coast tour of like Princeton and you know,
yeah.
And I was like, wow. When I was
Princeton,
a junior
Michigan.
In high school,
yeah, yeah,
I was like
right.
having sex with my boyfriend in the back of my Mustang. This, my brother's like touring
you,
colleges.
You were rebellious, but you also had like queer. Not to put words in your mouth, but you had like a queer taste. You had a sensibility for queer things.
Camp. I would say, with great respect.
Your friends are gay.
And I wonder.
Yes, the majority. I don't have a lot of. Well, I know a lot of straight men because of comedy.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason.
Your husband is also straight.
I am married to a straight man.
Yeah. A wonderful man named Jason.
Yeah. And I think it's good that I forget that, because he's good enough that you do forget in the best part.
But he's an honorary gay, too. I just love hugging him.
I mean, Jason has, we've talked about Jason having sort of a Sappho Leslie Light
There's
quality
that word again,
to him.
Sapphic.
Sapphic.
I mean, he would touch a dick as a joke. How in your family do you, I mean, since you're the black sheep, how did your parents react to Stephen? And do you sometimes, yeah, do you feel like I think a lot of gay people sometimes don't always feel a part of the family narrative sometimes.
Oh,
because,
no, that's not the case in our house at all. The boys are, well, okay, so... Well, first thing is when my brother came out to me, and I love that we found out where your brother came out to you, because my brother came out to me in our family hot tub. How much more Southern California than you need that?
We went in that hot tub.
Yes, you guys went in the hot tub.
Oh, yeah.
Our family home, we had this beautiful hot tub, and you could look up at the stars, and I remember him telling me, and I do remember this. This is actually a great thing. I was, oddly enough, sober. That was back when I was drinking heavily. So it was one of the rare nights that I was, well, I wouldn't say sober. I was cognizant.
Right.
So I wasn't like, you know.
Baby girl.
Yeah, I wasn't crawling. Yeah. So I remember my brother telling me, and I remember I held real still. It almost reminded me of like the first time you see a toddler stand up on their own and you don't want to look at them because they might sit back down again.
Right.
They pull themselves up of their own volition. And not to say that in any way that it implies that, you know, coming out is like the end of an infancy or something weird. I mean more like I didn't want to make it weird.
Yeah.
I just wanted to
getting that moment right. So, I mean, listen,
it wasn't my
gay
moment.
People, you should feel bad for your straight relatives.
Yeah. Just to finish that thought, was it emotional?
Yeah, I mean, I was like...
For both of you? Holding,
I don't know for my brother, because my brother's so... real circumspect. You know, he's just like... He's not a machine. My brother isn't C-3PO. But he's very... you know, he just doesn't have time for that. My brother's just so on it and smart and, like, he's gracious and warm, but he doesn't really dilly-dally with, like, someone else, myself, who was like, I saw a dead squirrel today. And then I couldn't, this happened this morning. And Jason was like, okay, my husband was like, we'll drive the other way. I'm like, it's still there. And there was tears. And I was like, I don't even want to go to this audition. The squirrel's in the road still. I mean, good Christ. My brother would be like, oh, it's the circle of life. A squirrel has died to give other's life. Well, gotta go. See, get it back on the aircraft carrier.
Right.
To me, I've always
Good
thought it's
him.
So. It's such a funny dynamic because, your parents and your family is like military family.
Yes.
But you like cut your hair like a rebel when you were a kid, and you grew.
I don't know about that.
Well, you did that.
I wouldn't use the word rebel. I'd use a slur.
There is a picture of you in a dance uniform that is the
many.
Best. Thing.
Well, you have a beautiful head of red hair, and you insisted on cutting it really short.
Yeah. Well, it's curly.
Curly.
And I didn't know what to do with it because I, being from Southern California, everybody had, like, beautiful, long, blonde, stick straight hair.
Yeah. Yep.
And natural curl, well, let's just put it this way. In The Princess Diaries, remember when she's not cool and cute yet? And
right.
She's ugly, and she has curly hair. But then she becomes a princess. Do you think her hair stayed curly?
Yeah.
That's another rant I'll save for another podcast.
Yeah.
So, that's what I grew up with.
But
can I say something real quick? I thought
about
Anne Hathaway? Today, where I've always hated my hair, and I always wanted... There was this kid who went to, like, school with me, and he had... You know that kind of hair where blonde hair, and you could run your hands through it, and it would fall exactly where it had just been, like perfectly symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
I never had that. I had if I grow my hair
You're
out, it's like Beethoven hair, where it's all over the place.
He's right.
I've never
He's
seen your
Greek.
Hair longer.
Well, that's,
than
and that's
this.
Yeah. I have a buzz cut still.
Yet the irony.
I don't like my hair.
The ultimate irony is Brent likes to play with the back of his hair, which is very short.
Yeah.
But when he says it's quote unquote long, it's like it's not long. It's short hair. But he plays with the back of it and says, and I've said he's like twirling his tresses.
His golden brown locks. His golden brown locks.
But it's his favorite thing.
You have like shorter hair than my brother.
I play with my hair
Navy.
So aggressively that my wrists get sore.
Fritz!
like literally, like my wrist will be like sore the next day.
I want you to grow your hair out. I bet it would look really cool.
It'll never happen.
Can we ask, because I mean, we started the segment off with sort of me joking about you guys being allies, but I do want to seriously ask you about the word ally. Because I know that's a really complicated word, especially in this day and age, for lots of different reasons.
Sure.
Would you consider yourself an ally? And what are your thoughts on that?
I would say, I thought about this a lot. I live my life to be of service to other people. That brings me joy and happiness, whether it's making comedy that takes down
creeps and rapists, whether it's like just being kind for no other reason than that, nothing in return, just kindness. So to me, if helping other people be treated as decently as possible as being an ally, okay, yeah, cool. I'm that. Do I need people to know that? Do I need to announce it?
Tweet about it.
Do I need to tweet about it? Do I need to hashtag it? No, I do not.
Right.
Because I choose to live as an example of kindness and respect and decency and equality and diversity and inclusion. And you just, any buzzword you want to say, I'll
Mazel
say
Mazel tov to them.
But I think it's you have to be careful when you decide. I think a lot of people decide that that's a mantle.
Yeah.
That they want to wear. And it's not a trend. Being kind and respectful to all human beings, it's not a trend.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. That.
Yeah. I mean, I do find that a lot of people, I mean, and this is just me inferring with a lot of straight people, especially those straight people who love everything gay in a way that is just sort of like a little bit like they're co-opting a narrative. But they call themselves allies as if it's sort of like a thing to be, like you said,
or
applauded
a job
for.
Or something.
It should be, it's like this person is so great that they're so supportive of their gay brothers and sisters. And it's like, well, that's great. But like, you know, maybe just like make sure that I get paid the same.
Have you?
You know what I mean?
Have Alan, you and Brent, both of you guys separately, found that your siblings have taken on a certain tone or like an allyship when you came out, or even as you've gotten older? Like with Devin, has Devin ever?
I think Devin, my older brother, was always a liberal guy, and I don't remember him ever having homophobic moments or saying anything. And, you know, I know he takes his kids to like gay pride parades now, but I think he probably would have done that if I hadn't come out.
So right. Mm.
I don't think his experience is fundamentally different.
Mm. My siblings, my three brothers, they are all really different. One of my older brothers, he has two kids. And I remember, especially when I went home this past holidays with Michael, that the kids didn't have the language to understand the relationship that we had.
Fascinating.
And it's like,
did you feel weird by it?
No, not at all. I never feel weird. but if I was a parent, I would probably try to prep my children for what they're about to see and make them understanding so that they know the language. It's the same thing. I mean, it's a lot of things. Like and I don't think it's necessarily he's homophobic or not an ally because he's fully supportive of me. But it's also like, I just don't think fundamentally he understands the world that I live in.
Right.
And but on the other side of that, though, one of my older brothers, Jason, he is like awkwardly supportive in every way, shape, and possible, but he doesn't want to come out and say he's supportive, so he'll say it in like a roundabout way. So he'll be like, he'll go on for a half hour about this guy at a bookstore talking about books, and he's like, this guy, he's just so colorful, he's so
colorful, you know,
he's really loud and he sings a lot, and you know what, he's just the greatest guy, and I know what he's doing.
That's cute.
That's
though
so funny.
I think that's cute,
but it's
ham-fisted, but it's dear.
It is.
Do you
dear
not think it's, do you think dear it's cute?
Of course.
He's
your brother, so
he's my brother, so I'm fucking annoyed
you're
by
allowed
him
to be annoyed by your own brother.
But I also understand where it's coming from, and I'm very grateful for it.
I can say my sister is such an ally that she calls me homophobic.
A lot.
Quite a bit.
One of the most contentious parts of your relationship sometimes.
Yeah, you said that's true. What else?
Oh, I was going to finish something, and I got off track. And you guys had asked me how my parents reacted.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. So
you have lovely parents.
Thank
lovely
you. And they are very traditional, as we've discussed. And when my brother came out, they were also relieved in the way that I described that I felt, meaning we were happy that he was happy. And my parents grew up in a different time, and I hate when people say that usually. I want to be like, so what? But they did.
Yeah.
And it was not uncomfortable or unpleasant, but it was definitely the first time we all got together after my brother came out, before he married his husband and before his husband was with us as a family. It wasn't different at all, and yet it was.
Mm.
And then I remember asking my mom, just the two of us, about how she felt about it. And my mom grew up, well, I grew up and my mom grew up being very involved in arts and theater. And so my mom always had friends who were out, openly gay, out, and as did I. And so it was just, it was interesting. I was really surprised because my mom seemed almost tearful. Mm. And she said, I just worry that I did something wrong.
That's so fascinating.
And my mom is, and I the reason I bring that up is not to shame my mom at all. It's to be, it's to point out that there, everyone processes this differently, and not to take at all away the import and the impact of coming to terms with your sexuality and being healthy and happy about it. It's not my journey. It's not my mom's journey. It's not our story. Mm-hmm. But I remember being really angry with her when she said that. I mean, I was supportive, but then I think I came
I had a
complaint
total
to you, Ellie. I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
And I my mom is like one of my idols.
Oh, and she's and she's wonderful.
She's
a wonderful woman.
But she told
and
the
also
truth
that reaction,
of her heart.
That reaction, I think, as a, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I could imagine the no matter what your kids do, even if they're fucking Trump supporting assholes and you don't support Trump, you still want the best for your child.
Of
and you know, you don't want your child to struggle in any way, shape, or form.
That was my mom's reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, I like I've always taken on the as the older sister, I've like always taken on protecting Jake. And maybe,
very overprotective.
Yeah.
No, in a, I mean in a good way.
I would kill for that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But
don't kill me.
Just preemptively even. Mm-hmm. It's bad.
Yeah.
But I was a watchdog. He told me not to tell them. Mm-hmm. And so for 6 months, I held this secret as I think coming out was a part of why he dropped out of school. But he, it just was like a very rocky 6 months. Mm-hmm. And he finally told them. And I was like there to make sure they got it right.
The lawyer.
Yeah.
Really?
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mom had a similar reaction. It was a very honest reaction where she, for, you know, many reasons, society, whatever, was like, I worry things are going to be tougher for him.
Yes.
And I really jumped down her throat. And I was like, don't you dare do any of this around him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I did that right.
Yeah, because it shows the separation in where we are as a culture. I mean,
right.
You know,
yeah.
We are sort of the, where we grew up and who we, our parents, the values our parents instilled in us, and we're products of that, and our parents are no different. And so, like, where they come from, that's their natural reaction. And just because we have evolved into understanding that it's not necessarily going to be rough and a tragic struggle and all of these things, I think in some way we need to find, as a younger generation, the empathy to understand that people had different experiences.
Well, that's the thing that's so crazy about the times we're living in. And, you know, there's a lot that's wonderful about, you know, conversations that we're finally having and people coming into the light in ways. But there does seem to be a lack of nuance and this human fixation on
cancel culture.
What's that?
Well, we talked about it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm terrified constantly.
Yeah.
But me too. Every day I'm like, what did I say this time?
I know.
Ah!
Brandy and I coming on, we're like, God, we are the oppressors. Why do they anyone want to hear from us? We're
well, no, like
burn us.
You worry about sort of like, you know, not being woke, I guess.
Yeah,
saying the wrong thing and having people hate you for it for the rest of
and
your life.
And I was that person to my mom for a bit, and it is strange that there's no space for nuance and this idea that, like, you know, you can't have white girl feelings or straight people feelings. And it's like, I get that. There has to be space from the oppressor and safe spaces.
Basically,
absolutely.
The idea is like people should be allowed to process things like Brandy's mm-hmm. mom, to process them in real time.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's
without discriminating
right.
while you're processing.
Of course,
right.
it means
yeah.
processing it without being, you know, hateful or you know, spewing hatred on a loved one, but processing it and really thinking about it
and letting that be inelegant.
Yes.
And
imperfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were so right. And it comes from, I know where it came from my mom. It didn't come from homophobia.
No.
It was fear.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's what it, most of the time, I'd say 99% of the time, it is fear.
My mom
recently said, she was like, you know, raising kids is like blowing up a balloon and like releasing it over a cloud of needles.
Yeah.
And like, to that visual, I was like, oh, yep, that's why you're so psycho.
Right.
Like, you know?
So I had this...
She sounds very Freudian.
I had this moment during the film, Latter-day Jew, where, like, when I converted from Mormonism to Judaism, my mom had this, like, weird reaction. It was just sort of like, oh, that's nice. Like, I thought it was very cold. You know what I mean?
Right.
And my mom's not a cold person
at all.
That
was her reaction when you came out?
No, when I told her I was converting.
Got it.
And my mom's not cold at all, so I was taken aback by it, and I just decided to not talk about it. I decided to be very quiet with her about what I was doing. And then over the process of making the film in St. Louis, we were talking, and I said this to her, and she was like, well, no, it wasn't that. It was just that I had just finished chemo, and she didn't know how Jews, like, reacted to gay people and what they were. And she didn't want the same experience I had with Mormonism to happen again with Jews and for me to be hurt. And it's this weird sort of, like, mother love that that's
you never would have guessed.
You never would have guessed. And it's just, and it's, and I have to have empathy for that, even though she could have Googled. I have to have empathy for that.
Well, guys, I thank you so much for being here. I mean, it's just an interesting conversation to have, I think. You know, just to understand, it is different for everybody. You know, Brent and Alan and I all have siblings who are straight, you know.
Well, that's one thing I want to say to the audience listening. I know a lot of listeners are women because we get the DMs. And, you know, what do you, your queer family members, your queer siblings, what's your story? Definitely direct message us on Instagram.
And to that point, too, you know, something that Brent and I kind of privately laugh at now is the idea that, like, there was a novelty, like, 5, 6, 7 years ago to your coming out story.
Mm-hmm. Which is no one's business but the person coming out.
Correct.
Don't co-opt that.
Right. Yeah. And it's gotten to a point where it's kind of boring. The hope is that it's boring.
I don't have one.
No one asked me when I decided I liked boys.
Right.
No one ever said, Brandy, when did you know you wanted to chase the D? So why do you need to ask? It's no one's fucking business.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, it is nobody's business unless you want to tell them. But I think Brent and I always laugh because there's all these different places. It started with It Gets Better, but there are these places online where it's like people want these stories to be like super dramatic and tear-filled. And it's like, it's not always like that. And it's different for every different person, every different sibling, every different parent. Like, it's just different.
Sometimes you come out in a hot tub and then you're both quiet and then you both drink some more Miller
High
Life.
And then you get more drunk.
Yeah. You share the High Life, champagne, and beer.
And then you make him drive you to the liquor store so you can get more.
Wait, so we rode bikes. We don't drive drunk.
Where can people follow you guys on the interwebs?
If you choose.
If
you so choose to share it, I mean.
Oh,
you can remain
anonymous.
Please
don't say anything mean to me. I'm a nice person and I love you. Just know that. I'm at Brandy L. Barber on the IGs. That's Instagram, kids.
What are you,
I'm L. Fried, but it's like spelled fried. Like,
yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Instagram.
Delightful, delightful content.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us. We love you guys. Yeah.
And another thing.
Guys, when it comes to your drink of choice.
Diet Coke.
What is your drink of choice when it comes to booze?
You used to be a Fresca guy.
I did, yeah.
You weren't drinking for a while.
Yeah, even now I don't drink very much.
I think unfortunate.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's tragic.
Oh.
He really wants me to be an alcoholic. No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't grow up drinking because I was Mormon. And then
I grew up drinking. I was 20s.
10. Yeah, but I wasn't around alcohol.
Yeah,
there was no alcohol
in
my house. It just wasn't in my life.
Your parents still don't drink?
Presumably? No, never, ever. So, like, the idea of alcohol, bar, and everything was just so foreign to me. And then I started drinking in my 20s. And then, of course, starting in comedy became even more, because that's how you get paid half the time. And I started drinking a lot. And then with cancer, I started drinking a whole lot. And so I just stopped. Yeah. I just kind of stopped and wanted to not let it be a problem. And now I just don't drink very much. I find, if, especially with performing and stuff, I really don't like the idea of losing myself. You know what I mean?
Well, if you're just to chill at home on your couch with
Michael, I still won't drink. I want to eat chips.
A glass of wine.
But what's your drink of choice if you are going to have a drink?
If I'm going to have a drink and I'm at someone's place and I know I don't have to drive or anything, it'd be wine.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
A red or a white?
Depends on what we're eating.
Yeah, I feel like rosé.
Jesus.
No, I would
you
not
plan
do rosé.
It out that far out?
No, but it does depend on what you're eating. If it's pasta, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Brent?
You know, I go through phases where, like, sometimes, like, in college, I was really into boxes of wine. And then, like, I moved to New York, and I was all about, like, economic efficiency. Like, I would buy the cheapest.
You would pound
your
bar.
Your cocktail of choice was swigging vodka and Diet Coke on a street
corner.
Everyone
from my New York days remembers me as the guy who always had a flask.
Not even. We would go to the bodega so that you could buy a tall boy. And literally, I remember standing outside of some comedy club before we went to Boiler Room.
Yeah.
Just so you could finish your tall boy.
Just chugging
pounding
it.
My
pounding
my tall boy. Out of a bag.
Out of a bag.
Because obviously you can't drink beers on the street.
And you would be so nervous, you would be hiding behind
Brent
me.
Brent was always terrified that,
that
some
I was
big
get
bad
arrested.
Yeah, some big
and you
bad
would always
police
be like,
officer.
Do you want one? And I would be like, no, I was going to buy it at the bar.
Yeah. But you were always terrified that some sort of like bouncer or cop or somebody was going to come and see you with a flask and throw you out on the street and lock you up.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you never know. But here's the thing. It's like, especially in New York, more or less in your 20s, to get drunk, my tolerance has still never been that high. It's still relatively low, but to get drunk would, in theory, have cost me $50 every
night. Not a Boiler Room, under $20. They had that $3 well drink thing going on. That's why I went there.
Yeah, $3 well drink though. That's not a hard pour.
No.
You're not getting much in that.
But three of those and whoo.
But regardless, so these days, the other thing I was going to say is I go through cycles where like certain boozes will start making me sleepy.
Mhm.
So I have to switch it up. Like I had to give up whiskey cuz it was like making me fall asleep.
Wow.
I'm like a tequila guy now. I'm all about margaritas.
Do your parents drink? A little bit, right?
My dad has a little bit. He'll drink, like, occasionally. And, like, wine. I got back into wine again.
What kind of wine?
Garbage wine.
You like boxed garbage wine?
Just garbage wine is fine. Yeah.
Turner Classic Movies has a great wine club.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I had it for a year, and it was delightful.
Yeah.
Because you, like, get the wine, then you watch the movie.
Did you know, like, Francis Ford Coppola has made more money?
It's good. It's good
more money with his wine than his films.
Yeah, not surprising. It's
That's
good
astounding
wine.
To me.
Good wine.
I think like Brent grew up in a house with very little booze, very little alcohol.
Right.
My mom never drank really, and then my dad would like have a beer or two every now and then. Was pretty much like tipsy by the second, and you know we're so Jewish that like. The liquor cabinet is literally like the liquor hasn't been touched.
Manischewitz wine or some shit.
No, not that. I was going to say it's like it's culturally it's in the sense that it's like there's a liquor cabinet, but literally they don't drink it. And my mom uses that liquor cabinet for room temperature water bottles.
You know what's interesting? American Jews can't handle their liquor.
No, they can't.
They cannot. But
it's a Tay-Sachs.
When I travel, I drink a shit ton.
Yeah.
And in Israel, I've been to Israel a bunch of times now, and not only do they have incredible wine in Israel, like incredible, they are all fucking luscious.
They're the fun Jews.
Here's the other thing I'll say.
The fun Jews.
I have drank consistently for my entire adult life. My palate for drinking is still so simple. I still think whiskey tastes like shit.
Disgusting.
It does.
Any shot will make me like gag.
What about scotch?
For a minute. Hate scotch.
Disgusting. It's poison.
I can only really do tequila and vodka if I'm
I don't know a fancy wine over it.
Yeah.
Like, I know obviously $3 chuck sucks, and I have friends who have nice wine, and the nice wine is usually like a little like less sour or whatever.
Have you ever had a wine, it's happened to me once or twice, where it actually tasted like the thing that wine that onophiles talk about when they're like, oh, there's nodes of this and that.
In Argentina,
never. I've had it once and it blew my mind.
I had been drinking wine for a while, probably usually cheap wine, and then I went to Argentina on a vacation years ago, and their wine is so cheap, but it is just like, it's just the best thing I've just ever. Their Malbec wine there is just heavenly.
I can't do red.
I would drink it. Why?
It gives me stomach acid. And that started...
What? So Jewish.
Yeah, that started with Manischewitz, and I would do the drinks at Passover.
Anxious.
And it... No, not anxious, but it makes my stomach hurt so much.
Yeah.
I like white. I'm like, you know...
You would sneak a sip of wine, and you would feel guilty and almost...
No guilt. It just hurt my stomach. But I didn't finish by saying my cocktail of choice, which is honestly, like, whatever cocktail is sweet. Yeah. You give me a sweet cocktail.
You drink shandies.
Well, that's my favorite drink.
Like I love lemonade and a little bit of beer.
No, I wouldn't say that. Beer and a little bit of lemonade.
That was my first drink ever.
It's the best. Oh, you told me about that in Germany.
Yeah, I remember. I had never drank before in my life. I was a foreign exchange student. I went to Germany. I ordered a beer. I was like,
this is gross.
And this German lady came up. The German waitress came up. She took my beer away. And me being the Midwesterner, I was like, but I paid for that. And she brought it back to me, and then she told me to drink it, and I drank it, and it was just like sweet water.
Nothing is better than a Narragansett shandy, because she puts some 7-Up in there.
Yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it in the U.S.
Right, but I have it with lemonade.
That's how they do it in Europe.
Once a month still, I walk to Ralph's. I don't want to drive. I want to sort of bathe in this experience.
That's a mile walk.
So it's about a mile from my apartment. I walk to Ralph's, and I buy myself a tall boy of a Lima-rita. And that's, you know,
that's... Do you drink it on the way home?
You ever seen these in the grocery store? No, I do wait to go home.
Yeah, great.
They are...
They're delicious.
They're strong. They're like 8%.
What are they? I don't know what they are.
It's Bud Light with Mark...
It's malt beer, basically. So it's like flavored.
It's disgusting.
That's technically what it's called. It doesn't taste like beer. It's like a low alcohol margarita, basically. It's like 8 or 10%.
It's soda.
Yes, I don't like soda. I don't like sweet drinks.
But it is such a fun night. You get shit faced.
It's such a fun night when you walk home.
Yeah, I just really like getting my lime. I'm like,
but you like it.
Usually by 2 or 3, I'm like, you know what? It's a Lima-rita night.
You have mirror drinking, you call it.
I used to call it mirror
drinking.
Can
you drink and perform?
No, I never drink. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say never, but I'll have like half a beer before I go up.
I can't anymore. I used to be able
with
to.
How I talk.
Exactly. Yeah. I had to stop completely.
I got into it and made a mistake. But one time when I was doing my live show at the Satellite here in L.A., I got pretty drunk pretty quickly while hosting my own show.
Yeah.
And you guys might remember if you were there.
Who was on it?
Alaska Thunderfuck was the guest.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
And I had my first heckler.
Yeah.
And that heckler was a gay man waiting for Alaska to come out. And I was already a little tipsy. And I didn't know what to do because he heckled me by saying, "Just sing, bitch."
That's right.
strangest thing I've ever had happen to me on stage.
Elliot's show is singing
music and comedy. Yeah. What would your aunt say? Brian, what would your aunt say about something she heard on today's podcast?
It sounds like you drank too much.
My Aunt Joanne would say, "Tell Brent that Jews drink more than Manischewitz at Anti-Semite."
My Aunt Anne would say, "I don't think anyone should be fired from their job for anything other than that coworker of your Uncle Ray's. He peed in the coffee pot, and it became a big scandal on Hard Copy."
Was it?
It was, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
He was peeing in the coffee pot for, like, months.
And it
was
I remember that.
Yeah, it was, like, in the 90s.
I remember that. That was your uncle's boss?
That was my uncle's, not boss. It was a coworker.
Oh, that's right. And, like, 10 people died.
No, nobody died.
No, 10 people died.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I'm Elliot Glazer.
No, 12 people died.
Oh, my 17 God.
17 people.
Brent Sullivan.
H. Allen Scott.
A podcast network. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.